Parental discretion is advised for the following discussion. Hello, I'm Jerry Newcomb, and welcome to Vocal Point. Today we're going to talk about, at least the first segment, we'll deal with sexual addiction. Now, it's easy to assume that this is just a problem in the world and not necessarily the church, but there is a hidden addiction that does impact people perhaps more than we realize. We're going to talk right now with Dr. Mark Laser. That's spelled L-A-A-S-E-R. He's even written some books on the subject. He has ministered to hundreds of sex addicts and their families. He's the founder and director of Faithful and True Ministries. Dr. Laser, welcome to the program.
It's wonderful to be with you, Jerry. I've been looking forward to it. Thanks.
Sure. Now, tell me, when I say that perhaps there's a hidden addiction, even in some cases within the church, is that true?
Hidden only in the sense that I think any topic that involves sexuality, Jerry, is one that the church has had a hard time talking about, being open about. I think it goes back to the garden. I think Adam and Eve were naked and not ashamed, and then after the fall they put on clothes. So I think we've had a hard time talking about sexuality ever since. And the church, I think, really has neglected its responsibility to teach people God's plan for healthy sexuality. I just don't hear that much of it going on out there. And so that's why I think we call it a hidden addiction or a hidden problem. And the percentages are staggering, you know, within the evangelical Christian church that, you know, huge percentages of men and women actually are dealing with, at the very least, internet pornography and, you know, and then worse things as well. And our pastoral ministry is not exempt from that. There's a very high percentage of pastors who are struggling with these issues as well.
Hmm. Well, every once in a while you'll see a prominent minister fall, and it was like, wow, right. I didn't think he would.
Right.
It's surprising. Right. You mentioned God's plan for sexuality. What is that?
Well, you know, that's a great question. It's first of all, I think we need to go to Genesis, where it all started. So in Genesis chapter 4, when the Bible describes that Adam and Eve had sex for the first time, the term or the phrase there is Adam knew Eve. And that refers to sexual intercourse. But the Hebrew verb that is used there is the verb yada, to know. It's also the verb that's used throughout the Psalms about knowing God. So there's something about sexuality that God intended that when Adam and Eve knew each other, they knew each other. They knew each other spiritually, emotionally, and I think sexuality was the expression of it. And Paul in Ephesians 5 even talks about that when a man and a woman come together, they become one flesh. And what he's talking about is the mystery of the relationship between Christ and the church. So there's something about knowing God in the knowing of each other, and there should be something about Christ actually being in the relationship, so that an act of sexuality, I think, in God's estimation, is actually a spiritual act between a man and a woman who have committed their relationship to marriage. It's a sacred covenant, it's a sacrament, and that I believe is God's plan for sexuality. He doesn't plan for us to be sexual when we're single. He doesn't plan for us to, you know, get divorced. He doesn't plan for any of that. He plans for one man, one woman to have sacred, spiritually oriented, Christ-centered sexuality for the rest of their marital life.
Hmm. Now, I know in your case, you've been open and honest about what happened with you. Would you mind just briefly sharing your own personal story?
Not at all. I think if unless most, you know, some of us who've had a story are willing to be transparent about it, you know, we won't encourage other people to come forward. Yeah, the truth is that I struggle with sexual addiction since about the age of 11 or 12 when I started looking at pornography, and that led me into, sometimes on the radio we have a hard time using the M word, masturbation, but that led me into that. Like, I think all the Christian men that I work with, we really have felt and thought, and I know I did, that when I got married to my wife, you know, all of my sexual fantasies, all my lust issues, all my problems would be over with. So that's based on 1 Corinthians 7, where Paul talks about if you struggle with lust, go ahead and get married. And when I found out that sex was not as frequent as I thought it should be, That gave me a sense of some anger and entitlement. I went back to pornography and masturbation. That escalated into across the flesh line experiences with other women. And by the way, at this point, I was already an ordained pastor and was already a PhD in the field of pastoral counseling.
So, oh, wow. In counseling,
yeah,
no less.
In counseling, no less. So,
counselor,
you know,
heal thyself.
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Physician,
yeah.
Heal thyself.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like the old joke, too, that a doctor who tries to treat himself as a fool for a patient. So, you know, that was true for me. I mean, I thought, well, you know, I was so deluded. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah.
So alive with sin. It wasn't even funny. Satan was having his way with me because I was silent. I wasn't talking to anybody about any of this stuff. I could not get honest. I was afraid that if I got honest with my wife about any of this struggle, she'd divorce me. And if I got honest with any of my accountability through my denomination, that they would excommunicate
defrock me. Defrock you.
Defrock me and all of that. So you know, I kept quiet till the point where I did get intervened on finally in 1987 and sent off to treatment.
But what actually happened, if you don't mind my saying so?
Well, one of the women that I was involved with at that time in 1987 reported their relationship to the board of directors of both the church and the Christian Counseling Center where I was working at that time. And so a group of elder types, board members, brought me into a room one day and disclosed what they knew. They were very angry, and they fired me from every job that I had. And one of the elders was a physician and a recovering alcoholic. And he was able to see the similarities between my behavior and alcoholism and knew enough to have heard that there was a new treatment program for sexual addiction. And he saw to it that I got to that program. And that was in March of 1987. And that's my sobriety birthday. So I've been sober now, or shall we say sexually pure, sexually faithful to my marriage now for the last 27 plus years. So it's out of my own darkness and my eventually finding help, you know, through the power of the Holy Spirit, because God putting that guy in the room with that knowledge,
yes,
you know, that wasn't just coincidence, you know. And I think God has given me the calling to help other men come out of this darkness, and that's what we've been trying to do for the last 27 years.
It almost sounds like the biggest thing you needed was, you know, to let it be known. So in other words, get out of the darkness, even though it was a scandalous thing for you in the long run.
Right.
You're probably grateful that you were
absolutely
finally exposed. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Which sounds strange. I mean, when you think about getting publicly exposed, my story wound up on the front pages of the local newspapers. It was a horrendous thing at the time, and today both my wife and I are extremely grateful for it. We wouldn't have the lives we have today, and we wouldn't have the marriage we have today if it had not been for that. And the Bible is pretty consistent, isn't it, in telling us that it's usually out of great trials, conflict, pain, that God has the opportunity to wake us up and perfect our character. And that's how I look at it. You know, God was in this, and I am so grateful that I got intervened on because I was so deluded and lost in sin that, you know, I was beyond asking for help for myself at that point.
Wow. And you said you started with pornography at the age of 11. How old were you when the scandal broke?
I was 37, so I was really lost in that world for about 26 years.
Oh, wow. Okay, we're talking right now with Dr. Mark Laser. Laser is spelled L-A-A-S-E-R. We're talking about sexual addiction. He has founded and is in charge of Faithful and True Ministries. And I understand that you actually have there's a center, I believe it's in Minnesota, where people can go and get the kind of treatment that you were offered way back when.
That is right. Well, we don't offer inpatient care like where I went.
Oh, okay.
And we offer, whatever we offer here is Christ-centered. And
good for you.
The treatment center where I went was just a secular program. But it was good enough to get me sober, and then, of course, I brought my own faith back into that.
That's interesting you use that word sober, because usually that word is used in reference to either booze or drugs. But you're using it in reference to pornographic addiction.
Well, that is right. You know, when I say that I'm sober, that means that I've been free of certain things. I've been not involved with certain things. So, in other words, the only sexuality that I've expressed in the last 27 years is with my wife. You know, I haven't been sexual with myself. I haven't been sexual with others. I haven't looked at pornography, you know, that kind of thing. So, and by the way, I think sobriety is so much more than just what you're stopping. I think sober men are also men who are faithfully leading their homes, faithfully pursuing God, faithfully pursuing God's word, faithfully pursuing God's call in their life. So when I say sober, you know, it does definitely mean there's a whole bunch of things that I haven't done in the last 27 years. But hopefully it also means that I'm pursuing God in my life and his call and direction in my life.
All right, so tell us about your center. We know it's Christ-centered, and we know it's in Minnesota, and we know it deals with sexual addiction. Tell us more.
Well, we do have, given the fact, you know, by the way, that you know I'm a man, and my wife is the spouse of an addict. You know, we focused our ministry on working with men who struggle with sexual addiction. There are growing numbers of women that are struggling with sexual addiction. That is not our strength. There are partner ministries that we have, and you can go to our website and find that deal with female sexual addiction. But in the meantime, you know, we have men come here from all over the world. We just did a 3-day workshop last weekend, and we had a guy from Moscow here, and we had a guy from China here, and we have literally men come from all 50 states at times. And we do this. The heart and soul of what we do is this 3-day workshop, which we hope will break the bondage and get guys going on the right path towards sexual purity. Then we also work with the husbands and their wives as couples, and you know we have materials and workshops. And then my wife and I, on a daily basis, we just met with a new couple before I got on the air with you, and you know we're here to help couples who have experienced the betrayal of infidelity. You know, stay married, put their marriage back together, become the couple that God calls them to be. And that's really the heart and soul of what we do on an average day, is really work with marriages.
Wow. By the way, I imagine there are some situations where people will come to you. The man is willing to come because he's broken and so forth, but the woman is so upset at the man finding out about this that she's not willing to come.
You're very perceptive. You know, that's true. It's kind of one of the major challenges we face, you know. But on the other hand, that's what my wife Debbie, who has been betrayed and knows what this journey is like. And by the way, she's written a book about this, and people can go to our website and find all this. But
what's your website? What's your website?
FaithfulAndTrue.com. So it's all spelled out: FaithfulAndTrue.com. And we hope they will, only in the sense that there's a lot of resources there. There's articles there. There's, you know, encouragement, hopefully, there. There's
sure.
videos there that you can watch and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay, is it faithfulandtrue.com or faithfultrue?
Faithfulandtrue.com.
Okay, go ahead. You were going to say something about your wife and the recovery there, her acceptance of you eventually.
Well, I was just reacting to your perception, and you're quite perceptive that, you know, the average wife thinks that, well, they're very betrayed, they're very angry, they're very hurt, they're very despairing a lot of the times. And some of them, not all of them, but some of them feel that, you know, let me get my husband fixed, and then we'll see what happens. Some of them actually do come in right away. Debbie has always felt, my wife has always felt, that the wife needs to get a lot of support. You know, when you have a husband who's been exposed for doing these things or confessed that he's doing some things, you know, it's hard to know where to find safe people to talk to.
Yeah.
You know, you don't bring this up in the church coffee hour, you know, and you don't bring it up at BSF or, you know, someplace like that. So We like to think that we provide resources for the women to get help, get honest, get supported, go through this together and stuff like that.
Okay, so let's say you have a man, a sex addict. Why don't you give us an example of almost like a profile. What is it that he's seeking? In some cases, there's an addiction that just goes beyond common sense, goes beyond just the normal, you know, bodily urges or whatever.
That is right. And, you know, addictions, you know, always defy common sense because people are pursuing, you know, very self-destructive behaviors and continue doing it despite the consequences of it. And that's one of the definitions of addiction. I think the main thing to think about, if, you know, we can apply the label addiction to any substance or any behavior, the behavior needs to also produce a neurochemistry or a neurochemical release in the brain that the brain can get addicted to. With sexual arousal or sexual thought, sexual fantasy, sexual activity, there's a lot of chemicals that are released in the brain, not the least of which is norepinephrine or adrenaline, and then also dopamine, which is the pleasure chemical in the brain. If you just think about those two for the purposes of simplicity today, even thinking about sex, sexual fantasy, sexual thought, lust, you know, creates adrenaline and dopamine in the brain. Those two in combination have actually been compared to cocaine. So we're literally, if addiction applies, you know, we're literally talking about the brain becoming tolerant or dependent on us, in this case, a neurochemical substance. But let's not confuse the fact that, you know, this is sin. So, you know, it's original sin. People have made a choice. When we say it's an addiction, it doesn't mean that they don't have a choice. They have a choice to get the help that they need and to get free of this. But at some point, it won't feel that way. Their brains are so, you know, dependent or on fire for this that it just feels like it's drawing them back over and over and over again. That's that sense of unmanageability that the average addict feels, that, you know, I wanted to stop but couldn't. It's kind of like what Paul talked about in Romans chapter 7, verse 15, the good that I would, I don't do, and the evil that I hate, that's what I do.
So when they come to your center, Faithful and True Ministries in Minnesota, and they go through this three-day workshop, how do they get cured?
Well, you know, cure is an interesting term, isn't it?
Is it the wrong term?
Well, I think it is in the sense that...
How do they get changed?
They get changed. They get transformed. They get committed. They get willing. If we can help them get willing to do whatever it takes to stay free of the sexual sin for the rest of their lives. Now, if you want to apply the term cure to that, you can. But, you know, those of us that have experienced addiction, we're a little wary of that. Because we know
let him
how
who
powerful.
Sins, or you know, let you don't want to be presuming that you're changed and that's it, and you're no longer vulnerable to this. Is that what
that's
you mean?
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, the average man living in our culture. Let's face the fact that our culture right now around the world, and certainly in the United States, is rather sexually saturated.
Oh yeah.
You know, we're going to come across, you know, an average of 50 to 100 sexual stimuli a day. And if I think for one second, even after 27 years of solid sobriety, that, you know, I'm not vulnerable to all the stimuli that are out there, I'm sadly mistaken. So,
right. Okay.
You know, on a daily basis, I'm going to have to commit my day to the Lord, and I'm going to have to commit my day to my wife and my family and to the ministry to which God has called me. And that's a daily decision on my part. That's how I look at it. Now, if that's a cure over the last 27 years, it is. I'm also diabetic, by the way. So, you know, I've been taking insulin every day of my life for the last 37 years. I'm not cured of diabetes, but I certainly have managed it well over the last 37 years.
All right, we're talking right now with Dr. Mark Laser. That's spelled L-A-A-S-E-R, faithfulandtrue.com for more information. And going back to that question I asked that, I kind of interrupted by using the word cure. What happens in the three-day process for a sexual addict who comes to your ministry for 3 days? How do they get changed? How do they get transformed? What's the essence of the program, if I could ask?
Well, the essence of the program, I think, is really that, you know, other men come and we start talking about these things. I think the greatest freedom is to expose the lies that we still believe. And the way we do that is by talking with each other about our histories and about some of the core beliefs that we still hold on to that Satan has put inside of us. So it's kind of, there's kind of almost an emotional spiritual exorcism of sorts where we just get all this junk that's been inside of us, the secrets, the lies, the shame, the beliefs, we get it out in the open. Then we do a lot of teaching about God's truth, about accountability, about what you need to do to pursue purity, some of the strategies that are going to be important. You know, I talk about taking every thought captive, 2 Corinthians 10:5. What does that really mean? We talk about 7 principles of accountability according to the book of Nehemiah. You know, how to set up a wall of protection for not only you, but your family. But I think most of all, it's just really the men just getting exposed to truth, getting exposed to hope and a plan. You know, here's a plan. Here's something that you can pursue and follow. And, you know, our strong emphasis is, like I just was talking about just a minute or so ago, that this needs to be a daily commitment on your part. This is not, well, okay, we're going to come and at the end of the 3-day workshop, we're going to go out back, build a bonfire, you know, sing some songs, and then now you're done, now you're cured. You know, no, now, you know, it's like AA says, this is the first day of the rest of your life. And are you committed to be sober today? Tomorrow we'll wake up and pray and commit ourselves to God that we'll be sober today and we'll take it one day at a time.
Hmm. And through this process, hundreds have been helped through the years.
Well, we've treated over 5,000.
Wow.
So, yeah, hundreds, that's true. And then, you know, we've put a number of books out there. You know, I don't know what the exact number of people have been helped. And certainly I'm not the only Christian writer writing about this. You know, there's one of the great blessings over the last 25 years since my first book first came out is that, you know, there's been a lot of other people who are now contributing to this dialogue and this ministry, and there's a lot of other books out there and a lot of other speakers. You know, it's just been a blessing to me. When I first got involved in the field in 1987, there was nobody in the church talking about this stuff. Nobody was talking about this. And that has dramatically changed in the last 27 years.
Sure. And I understand there's a lot of anonymity, that's easy for me to
right.
say, in the group because, I mean, for example, I've been told, you don't know, but you might turn around and there's somebody famous there at the group, but that person needs to come clean and needs to right. get this out in the open so that the sin will no longer dominate his or her life. I guess in your case, it would be mostly his life because that's what you've said, that it's mostly men you're dealing with.
Yeah, I'm only dealing with men, but it certainly could be true for women. And you're right, the anonymity question is crucial. I mean, you know, we have to get in community that's safe, you know, where people are going to protect us from possible vocational consequences. And, you know, we do have very famous people that come to the workshop, but we also have the everyday ordinary guy, and I think that's a great mix, actually. We all find out, despite the amount of money, fame, glory, power, occupation, whatever we have, we're all in this together. I will guarantee you this, at every workshop we do, we have at least one or two, if not more, pastors there who are finally, after years of darkness, getting honest. And we hope that, you know, those guys will go back and God will restore them to their ministry and they will become the beacons of light in the local congregations they serve such that they can lead the 60 to 70% of the men in their congregations who deal with this issue. They'll help lead them out of it as well.
You think the statistics are that high?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, I'm sad to say that the statistics, wherever they've been calculated, are pretty consistently the case that if you take an average group of evangelical men gathered, at least 2/3 of them will admit that they've struggled with pornography well within the past 30 to 60 days.
Wow.
I know that's shocking for
yeah.
a lot of men to hear, but, you know, Satan, the cultural warfare that is out there, the satanic influence on our culture is incredible, and we are losing the battle for the very soul of our nation, and one of the themes of my ministry over the next 10 years is to men, wake up, you know, wake up, because we've culturally conformed in ways that we don't even realize. I mean, the average Christian young single doesn't even necessarily perceive it as a problem to have had sex before marriage. So That's also based on research. So.
That's amazing. How could that be? It's not taught enough from the Bible?
Well, you just think about some of the popular TV shows, movies, songs, magazines.
No, they all point to it.
They all point to that kind of stuff. And don't get me wrong, we're not about shaming people if they've had sex before marriage or if they've had a terrible history. I'm just saying we all need to be committed to God's priorities here. And I think in our culture, rather dramatically, we have lost our way. There's just no question about it.
Sure. Now, in your particular story, before you were exposed and so forth, you lived a double life. So you would be...
Absolutely.
You were lying to your wife, and then you would go and be with other women and so forth?
That's right. Right. Exactly. It's what James refers to in chapter 1. I was totally unsurrendered to Christ. I mean, I was surrendered to Christ. I was already a believer, but there was this part of me that was, like James says, tossed to and fro like the waves of the sea. James says that man is what? A double-minded man. I knew what I was doing was wrong, but I had so many excuses, so many lies that I believed, that I was completely deluded.
I heard about one fellow who supposedly said, well, look, I've been serving the Lord so faithfully, and, David had his Bathsheba, so why shouldn't I have this? That kind of thing. And it's just, people could use the scriptures even and twist it to justify virtually anything, and that's a tragedy. But speaking of the scriptures, the Bible does say, no temptation has overtaken you except what is common to man. That's an important point, right. Isn't it?
It's absolutely important. That's 1 Corinthians 10, and I think we all need to remember the rest of that passage, which is, with every temptation, God will also show you the way of escape.
Yeah.
And oftentimes the way of escape is to get honest, to get help, to get accountability, to get support, to at least, talk about what you're dealing with, because there's going to be times that other men need to hold you up so that you can honest about the commitments you've made and all of that kind of thing. God is faithful. He will not abandon us. He will not leave us alone. He will show us the way, and we have to be open to looking for it.
Okay, suppose somebody's listening to this and they need help, but they can't afford to go to some sort of 3-day workshop or whatever in Minnesota. What would you suggest to them?
Well, I would suggest that they talk to their pastor first, who may or may not know. One of the amazing things is that there are some Christ-centered support groups in local churches that are not advertised because of the anonymity issue. So I would check with your pastoral ministry staff first to see if there might not already be something going on in your church that just hasn't been advertised. If not that, within your church, your pastor may... Pastors tend to be good referral sources. So, they might know of local support groups, maybe not at their church, but at another church. For example, I know you guys are built on the foundation of Dr. Kennedy.
Yes.
And you look at the Boca Raton and that area down there in Southeast Florida. There's 5 or 6 churches down there that have very active support group ministries in their church, Christ-centered support groups. Not well advertised, but you can certainly find out about it.
Sure.
There are counseling centers where people can get relatively inexpensive counseling, or where maybe their insurance would cover it. The key, though, bottom line, is that guys get courageous enough to talk to somebody about it. And I've always found that when you take that first step of honesty and openness up, you'll be amazed at the people that God will send in your life, like that doctor in my intervention back in 1987, who just happened to be included at that meeting in the last minute, and he knew where the help was. So
that's fantastic.
I would say that if you'll be courageous enough and get honest enough, God will send you messengers, sometimes referred to as angels, that will point you in the right direction.
FaithfulandTrue.com for more information. Again, Dr. Mark Laser, spelled Laaser, has been our guest. Dr. Laser, thanks so much for being with us.
I've enjoyed being with you.
All right. God bless you now. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay.